ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading, studying Srimad Bhakti, no, Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction. And let's try and go to text number three. Hare Krishna, 9. Okay, turn the pages back here. Utsahan nischaya. Utsahan nischaya daryat. Tat tat karma pravartanat. Sangha tyagat sato vritte. Shabir bhaktir prasidati. Die. And this robot is moving slowly. Text 5. Text 4. Got it. Devotionals, that's number three. Yeah, I said, yeah. There are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. Yeah, six principles. Being enthusiastic, endeavoring with competence, being patient, acting according to the regulative principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23. Hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. 5, abandoning the association of non-devotees. And 6, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. And the Purport Prabhupada says, devotional service is not a matter of sentimental speculation or imaginative ecstasy. Its substance is practical activity. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.1.1, has defined devotional service as anyābhilāsitā śūnyam jñāna-kārmādi-anāvṛtam anukūlyena kṛṣṇānu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. Uttama Bhakti, or unalloyed devotion unto the Supreme Personality of Godhood, Sri Krishna, involves the rendering of devotional service in a way that is favorable to the Lord. Yeah, favorable to the Lord. This devotional service should be free from any extraneous motive and devoid of fruitive karma or impersonal jnana, and all other selfish desires. Bhakti, Prabhupada says, is a sort of cultivation, which is the translation of the word shilanam, anu shilanam, shilanam, shilanam. Bhakti is a sort of cultivation. As soon as we say cultivation, we must refer to activity. Cultivation of spirituality does not mean sitting down idly for meditation, as some pseudo-yogis teach. Such idle meditation may be good for those who have no information of devotional service. And for this reason, it is sometimes recommended as a way to check the distracting materialistic activities. Yes. Meditation means stopping all nonsensical activities, at least for the time being. Devotional service, however, not only puts an end to all nonsensical mundane activities, but also engages one in meaningful devotional activities, Srila Prahlad Maharaj recommends Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bhadam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Yeah. The nine processes of devotional service are, okay, so we have to engage in devotional service. Hearing the name, the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. Chanting His glories, remembering the Lord, serving His lotus feet, worshipping the deity, offering obeisances to the Lord, acting as the Lord's servant, making friends with the Lord, and surrendering oneself fully to the Lord. So, Shravanam, right, is the first principle then of devotional service. Shravanam, or hearing, is the first step in acquiring transcendental knowledge. One should not give oral reception to unauthorized persons, however, but should approach the proper person, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita 4.34. Please repeat. Tadvidi pranipatena padiprasnena sevaya upadekshyanti te gyanam gyaninas tatvadarshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. A self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. It is further recommended in the Mundaka Upanishad, Tadvigyanartam. Yeah. Tadvigyanartam Sagurun Eva Bhigachet. Yeah. 1.2.12. To understand that transcendental science, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. Thus, this method of submissively receiving transcendental knowledge, transcendental confidential knowledge, is not merely based on mental speculation. Increase my font size here. In this regard, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami, Brahmande Brahmate Kom Bhagyavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lada Bija. And again, this is Rupa Shiksha, Madhya 19, Rupa Shiksha. In the course of traveling the universal creation of Brahma, some fortunate soul may receive the seed of Bhakti Lada, the creeper of devotional service. This is all by the grace of Guru and Krishna, CC Madhya 19, 151. The material world is a place of confinement for the living entity whose or who are by nature anandamaya, pleasure-seeking. They actually want to be free from the confinement of this world of conditional happiness. But not knowing the process of liberation, they are bound to transmigrate from one species of life to another. One species of life to another. And from one planet to another. In this way, the living entities are wandering throughout the material universe. When by good fortune one comes in contact with a pure devotee and hears from him patiently, one begins to follow the path of devotional service. Such an opportunity is afforded to persons who are sincere. Yeah? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is giving such a chance to humanity at large. If by fortune one takes advantage of this opportunity to engage in devotional service, the path of liberation immediately opens. One should accept this opportunity to return back home, back to Godhead, very enthusiastically. Eh? Without enthusiasm, one cannot be successful. Even in the material world, one has to be very enthusiastic in his particular field of activity in order to become successful. Student, businessman, artist, or anyone else who wants success in his line must be enthusiastic. Similarly, one has to be very enthusiastic in devotional service. Yeah. Enthusiasm means action. But action for whom? The answer is that one should always act for Krishna. Krishnartha kila chesta, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In all phases of life, one has to perform devotional activities under the direction of the spiritual master in order to attain perfection in bhakti yoga. It is not that one has to confine or narrow one's activities. Krishna is all-pervading. Therefore, nothing is independent of Him, of Krishna. As Krishna Himself states in the Bhagavad Gita, 9.4, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtena matstani sarvabhutani nachaham tesvabhashtitaha. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master, one has to make everything favorable for Krishna's service. For example, at present we are using a dictaphone. The materialist who invented this machine intended it for businessmen or writers of mundane subject matters. He certainly never thought of using the dictaphone in God's service. But we are using this dictaphone to write Krishna conscious literature. Of course, the manufacture of the dictaphone is wholly within the energy of Krishna. All the parts of the instrument, including the electronic functions, are made from different combinations and interactions of the five basic types of material energy, namely bhumi, jala, agni, vayu, and akash. The inventor used his brain to make this complicated machine, and his brain, as well as the ingredients, were supplied by Krishna. According to the statement of Krishna, matstani sabhabhutani, everything depends on my energy. Thus the devotee can understand that since nothing is independent of Krishna's energy, everything should be dovetailed in his service. Endeavor executed with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is called utsahan, or enthusiasm. Right. The devotee finds the correct means by which everything can be utilized in the service of the Lord, nirbandha krishna sambandha yukta vairagya uchate. The execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life. See, today is Ram Vijay Otsava, the victory of good over evil. So I guess Robin has had it by now. Sometime about, I don't know. Because reading this morning, the battle goes on for, was it half a day or something, right? They were fighting it out and shooting so many arrows that at one point Ram was covered with so many arrows, the whole chariot was like a porcupine. It was covered with arrows, and he couldn't even raise his finger to use his bow. But finally, his eyes became red, and he broke free. No, what happened? No, the Matali, chariot driver, took the chariot out of this cloud of arrows, and then Ram came back again like that, and was fighting with Ravana, cutting off his heads. And finally, with the advice of Vibhishana, he understood he had a amrita stored in his heart. So then he used a special brahmastra, and the hridai, aditya hridai. And the prayer of the sun god, and then dried up the nectar, and Ravan died. So Ravan and Kumbhakarna are incarnations of Jai and Vidai. So they were Ravan and Kumbhakarna before that. After that, they were. And after that, they were. Shishupala and Dantabhakra. You see all the way along, Hiranyakasipu, Ravana, Shishupal, they all had the same character. And then Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna, Dantavakra, they weren't so vicious, as the other guy, as their brothers. They were kind of big, kind of just gross demons, like that. And so finally they wanted to take birth again, one more encore in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as Jagai and Madai, and they were evil. It wasn't just like they were some kind of story tale demons. One time, one old man, he was taking his bath in the kunda, the pakor, a little pond in their village, and he couldn't walk so well. And his granddaughter, maybe 15 or something, was helping her grandfather walk every day down there. So Jagai and Madai were hanging out there, drinking some wine, some ananda, taking a little ananda. And then Jagai says, so then Jagai went up to where the old man was about to go in the water and said, oh, hey, old guy, here, old fellow here, let me talk to you, you know. So he turned around. And when he turned around, the Mudai knelt down behind him, and Jagai pushed the old man, he fell in the water and drowned. And they grabbed the girl and dragged her off in the bushes and raped her. Okay, Jai. This is Jagai and Mudai. They weren't like, you know, like storytale demons. So somebody asked Chitragupta, the secretary of Yamaraj, who keeps track of our activities, to see their account. And he said, he showed him all these books. He said, this is all their simple activities. He said, I've stopped keeping track. Is this like unlimited? You know? So, but Lord Chaitanya, he, because of Lord Nityananda's desire, right? He accepted their surrender, and then in Sarva Dharma Parityaja, he eliminated all their simple activities. So the story is, when he did that, for one moment, his body turned black. Lord Chaitanya, God himself, when he tried to absorb their simple activities, for a moment had a kind of a thing. But because these are his dearmost Vaikuntha attendants, Jaya and Vijaya. Yeah? And it's not that every Kali Yuga Jaya and Vijaya have to fall down, you know, and become Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Prabhupada says that in this particular cycle, you know, they were people falling down from Vaikuntha. But normally they are demons. They're real demons. They aren't like, you know, the fallen Vaikuntha inhabitants like that. You know? So this is, you know, all of these different pastimes, activities, incarnations. And then also it's the appearance day of Madhvacharya. And we're talking about how he is considered to be an incarnation of Vayu, like that, of Hanuman, like that. That's so very appropriate. He's born on the Ram Vijaya festival. You know? The story is, I've heard, one Purana, something like that, that Ravana was doing austerities, right, to get power. And he wanted to do that by getting the mercy of Lord Shiva. Okay, so he did austerities, and Lord Shiva said, I am pleased with you. What do you want? And so how many expansions did Lord Shiva have? 11 rudras. So then Ravana said, well, my lord, if you are pleased with me, let one of your expansions incarnate as a head for me for education. And Shiva said, so be it. He said, well, then another one can incarnate for making war, okay, for romance, okay. And after that, he kept asking for different rudras to incarnate as different heads. And so he had 10. Then I think somebody said then, well, don't be greedy. You got 10, I'll have 11. Okay. So he said, okay, you know. So the 11th Rudra became Hanuman like that, and destroyed him. So I guess the story is, if you're going to be evil, be completely evil. Yeah, don't leave nothing left. So he became the 11th expansion of Shiva. Story is that Shiva Semana, in the form of silver raindrops, was carried by Vayu to where Anjali was doing austerity, standing there, and she was just drinking whatever water fell in her hand, so she drank that and became pregnant, and then Hanuman came out of her ear like that, was born, you know. So it's Madhvacharya, considered the incarnation of Hanuman, and he had tremendous physical strength, even from the time he was a child, so many miraculous activities. There was an omen. You know, one person said that Hanuman was going to incarnate, and his parents, and they had this child, which matched the prediction. And he would do so many things. Whenever his mother would call for him, he would like jump over the house or something like that. He would immediately appear like that. And later, when he was traveling as a monk, they were attacked by a tiger, I think. He and his disciples, he killed the tiger. Another time they were attacked by a band of robbers who were going to murder them and rob them, and he killed all of those guys. Then one very famous wrestler. Actually, there was a wrestler in India who was very famous. He came to Europe, maybe like 1910 or something like that, 1910. And he was challenging if anybody could even stay in the wrestling arena with him for 1 minute. That was the big challenge. Now, maybe like, you know, 70,000 euros or something. Anybody who could stay in the... And we're not talking about defeating him, that anybody could last more than 1 minute before being defeated like that. He said nobody could do it. He was Pakistani, very famous, powerful wrestler. And finally, one European wrestler, the second the thing started, got on his stomach, because I think he had to turn the person over on his back and push his shoulders in the ground like that. So he got on his stomach, and he stayed there for 1 minute and 25 seconds. The guy just couldn't get him over like that. So he won. Yeah. So he was very powerful. And so one big wrestler in India challenged Madhvacharya, and Madhvacharya said, I'm just a monk, I don't do these things. He said, come on, I want to wrestle with you. He said, all right, if you can lift up my toe, then I'll wrestle with you. And this wrestler couldn't do it, couldn't lift his toe up. You know? Madhvacharya, if you are power, the power preacher. You know? Another time he was fasting for, I forget what it was like 1 month or something. And then to break his fast, he ate bananas, but a pile of bananas like this big, like that, bananas. Said his fire of digestion was like about that tall in his stomach. He was Vayu, you know, so on. So many pastimes, activities. It's a very nice movie produced by the Madhva Sampradaya. I think it has all these pastimes and activities like that. You know? So today also then is the anniversary of the disappearance of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami, you know, Prabhupada's disciple and my sannyas guru. So this morning we talked about Madhva and Lord Ram, you know, pretty extensively. And during our class, we actually showed part of the cartoon Ramayan movie with Hanuman coming to tell her that Ram is on the way. And finally, the part where Ravana comes out to fight with Ram. It's a good cartoon movie like that, you know, fighting. So, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, Todam Damodar Singh, is from Manipur. Here's our map of India. Okay, like that. Here's Delhi. Here's Mumbai. Here's Kolkata. And here's Manipur, like that. It's up in the northeast. And it's in the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains. It's a valley. It's about 10% valley and 90% hill country. So it's not really the Himalayas, but it's still, you know, high up there. What is it? 1 kilometer? About one kilometer, you know, the valley floor, like that. Yeah. And it's a very remote place. Actually, you have to, there's no train service from India. When India partitioned and you got Bangladesh separating off, then the Indian kept these northeastern states. Nagaland, Arunachal Pradesh, I think of what it is like that. Several like that. Manipur, about 4 or 5 little states up there, Nagalaya. And to connect it to India, there's Bangladesh cutting in here like this. So it's a very narrow corridor, you know, which connects it to the rest of India like that, little corridor. And you can see from the military point of view, anybody with any airplanes could just bomb away at that place and keep any army from moving through there like that. So the Indian government has to keep a whole standing army up there of like 40,000 troops or something to defend themselves against Burma, everybody else like that. So these are very traditional mountain states. The kings of Manipur were married with the kings of Nepal. The royal families were united. And mountain people are very famous, of course, for being like rugged, independent people. But it's also a natural corridor between China and India. So different kind of empires kind of move this way and that way. At the end of World War II, the Japanese were expanding all across China and starting to invade India, and they're coming through Manipur. So the last battle in World War II was carried out, called the Battle of Imphal, the capital of Manipur, up there, with British soldiers and Manipuri soldiers, British officers, Manipuri soldiers. Yeah. And so it has some history. Jai Shishibara Gopinath Ki Jai. And very rugged mountain people, very simple place. So they have traditionally, there are different forest gods that they worship. One is Tanjing, it's kind of like a mask like that, and he's in the forest. And they have different rituals, different festivals throughout the year for those, and very traditional stories. Like Kamba and Toibi, very beautiful romantic stories about boy and girl, princess getting married, and then different things, you know. And so, well, also too, the king of Manipur, one time the king of Burma, he gave him a deity of Vishnu, like this big, you know. And he said, well, how do I worship him? He said, well, I don't know too much, but I think he likes sweet rice, you know. So the little deity of Vishnu is in Vishnupur in Manipur. And the actual original temple is about as, you know, not very big, about as wide as the whole fireplace here. You open the door from the outside. And very simple worship was going on like that, you know, offering fruits and flowers. So many fruits, flowers, like 145 kinds of vegetables grow naturally like that. Manipur, a feast will be like about this much rice in this middle, and around like different banana boats made from banana leaves, maybe 7 different sabjis, then 14 different sabjis, and 21 sabjis, like that, you know. And it's all cooked by Brahmins with cloth over their face, you know, maybe in big pots like this on, put together on the fire. Maybe 2 Brahmins will cook for 50 people and serve it out like that, everything, you know. It's a very traditional place, you know. And it was restricted until recently because the government of India was afraid of people going there and creating, like, you know, a separatist. Because the Manipuris want to be separate, some of them, you know, minority, but some. It was actually kind of a violent movement. So the government kept the place isolated from foreigners because they didn't want them to develop this whole revolutionary movement and lose this, you know, frontier with Burma, like that. You know? So, and there's a big boat race every year. Kind of like, it's very, very Polynesian. They have these big lawn boats with people on both sides paddling like that. And they have races. And the king's boat, the deity of Vishnu, goes on that, you know, like that. So on, very colorful, decorated. Every house, most of many houses, have a hand loom, about like this wide, this tall. And, you know, the cloth, they make their cheddars there, you know, cloth like that. So there'll be like the house on one side, a little courtyard. Other side will be a little mandap, but raised up about this high, and, you know, closed on 3 sides, little roof facing the patio. In the middle will be tulsi plant area. And so this little blocked off area like that. And so then every year they have about maybe 4 or 5. They sponsor maybe 4 or 5 different kirtan parties, kirtan programs. Every house sponsors those. Somebody sits there and watches the kirtan, like that, for different festivals, you know. And the children play there, and the ladies, you know, aunts, sisters are making cloth, you know. So many people in Manipur, they're going around with this very bright, beautiful cloth with different colors. But it's made by your sister, or your mother, or your grandmother, or your aunt. You know, not something from the store, you know. It's just like, you know, it means something. And different patterns, you know, actually for different groups. So, traditionally, there's the valley people, And the tribal people. And tribal people are uncivilized. What did Prabhupada says ago? Nachama, duskritano, mudha, prabhajante, naradamaha. Naradamaha, lowest of people, like that. You know, almost uncivilized. So some of the mountain, like, I don't know if still are or not, but until very recently, a lot of the mountain people were even like headhunters. If your father did something bad to if your father killed my grandfather, then, you know, got to be pretty sure that I'm out to get your head, chop it off and hang it on the wall, you know. So they were like pretty uncivilized people like that. And they'd get together, and so there may be one extended family, maybe 25, would go on top of one hill and slash down all the vegetation, burn it, plant yams, we call them, sweet potatoes, stuff like that, keep some pigs, kill those. And after maybe like 3-4 years, it's all exhausted, they go someplace else. It's called slash and burn economy. Yeah. And every now and again, they all come to one place, maybe in fall, maybe like 3,000 people from different clans, and they get together and they have traditional dances. You see them going all night, maybe just a, you know, 600, 700, 800 people just dancing in a circle, chanting the same thing over and over again. And the basic step is maybe very simple like this, you know, like that, you know, like that, you know. So everybody goes around, but after that, you can add more to it like that, you know. So everybody, even little children can pick it up right away. But it's going all night. You know, drinking and dancing and jumping and exchanging marriages and who's going to be married. You know, all this kind of traditional stuff goes on. And very simple. And sometimes different clans are fighting with each other like that. You know? Just in the mountains, hill people, Naga, Kuki. But in the valley people are always more civilized. So they were worshiping Pakangba and Sanamahi, who appear to be Ganesh and Kartikeya. like that. The stories are similar like that. Huh? So then finally, at some point, one disciple of Narottam Das Thakur, his name was Haridas, he went there and he was preaching Sankirtan, right, to the king, all about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy and Radha and Krishna. And because he had these beautiful stories of Kamba and Toibi, they were already accustomed to, like, you know, divinity, conjugal divinity. So the king was totally enchanted. He said, yeah, this is what we're going to do. So he called for all of the pantheistic scriptures and everything to be brought to the capital, had a big royal funeral for them and burned them all. And he had everybody, your name is Vishnu Das, your name is Ram Das, your name is Krishna Das, your name is Matya Das, you're Radha Dasi, you're Lakshmi Dasi. It's like, you know. And not everybody agreed to this, but he was a very powerful guy and popular. So, pretty much at that point, they all became Gaudiya Vaishnavas. One day of Sankirtan, like that. Yes. But, still, you know, some of the scriptures escaped. So then they have Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, the valley tradition, and the mountain tradition. So all three traditions are there going on. And so that from that, so they keep it very, very strictly. They have Rabindranath Tagore, Nobel laureate in literature. He said in his position, the most authentic of all the Indian dance traditions was Manipuri dance, you know, because it goes back to using all these ragas and talas. And so the little boys and girls, they start to study from about, I'm 5 years old, really. Actually, girls this size, little girls, they start, you know, get them, you know, engage them in meaningful devotional service, right? And not meditation, you know. And, for example, maybe a few years ago, we went there about 4 years ago, for the Purnima, one Purnima festival. It was Ras Purnima. Kartik Purnima, like that. And in front of the temple, Sukhdamanamars, he enters in here. So he was born there. And his name was Todam Damodar Singh. So Todam is his father's name, Damodar is his personal name, and Singh is his clan name, like that. So that's how Manipuris do it. Paternal family, personal name, clan, like that. So he grew up, and his father actually left his body when he was pretty early, and his mother, I think, after that. So his aunts raised him up. And he said pretty early, he wanted to become a scientist. And, you know, he was reading a lot of books about brahmacharis and things like this. As a child, he was very inspired by different brahmacharis, what they were doing, and different activities. So he had this spiritual inclination. He said when he was a child, when the sun was coming up in the valley of Manipur, beautiful green valley, you know, like that, then the morning fog is burning off, people getting up. You know, there's not much electricity, but a little bit. And so there's maybe one radio station or something like that, no? So in the morning, it was playing Chaitanya Charitamrita. They were reciting Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengali, but very musically. And so every morning, every single radio in the valley would be on like that. So you'd hear this all over the entire valley with the sun coming up and the dew burning off and people getting up. And the sound of Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, playing like that. And then also when he was a child, there was two men, they went out in the morning to look for one cow, and they couldn't find her. And then suddenly one tigress just jumped out of the bushes, grabbed one of the guys, broke his back, and ran off with him, and the other guy's standing there. Like that, you know? So she was living in one swamp there near the village. It wasn't just too far from his village. And so they called the king of Manipur, and he came. He built a stockade, a fence, around the entire swamp like that. Then set it on fire. And so when she came out, he fought with her like that and killed her like that. And this is a real king, like that. You know, you've got, there's a whole technique they practice. A king, a kshatriya, is a big guy, you know, big and just powerful like that. You know. And so she came out, the horsemen and armor kept her from running left and right, so she went right for him. And she goes for you, you've got to get her on the shield, you have a special spear, you've got to go right down the throat and hit the heart. You know, you don't get two chances like that, you know. So he got her, whack, you know. And then they put the dead body on a royal palanquin, they take it back to the palace. And then one kshatriya who's about to retire from his activities then will break the back with one blow like that. You know, break the backbone. And then they have a whole royal funeral and they eat the body like that. Cannibalism, yeah. So if you want to eat meat, okay. This is what you got to do it like that. Yeah. So that is a story that one British guy, he was chasing a tigress, was causing problems, and he was down below this road, you know, with his followers, gun bearers like that, British officers. So finally he shot her, but he got her in the foot, you know. So that made her so angry. She was just running around like biting everybody and everything else. They're all running here and there. So funny, one Manipuri guy saw this up on the road. He was taking his cows home, his bulls. So he ran down with nothing but a stick and attacked this tigress and was beating on her. It's so funny, she ran away like that. God. The Manipuris, yeah, the Kshatriyas. Yeah. Subhadra Maharaj told me that in Manipur there's no like robbery, like somebody stealing a wallet or you know, this kind of stuff, you know, because there's no honor in that, you know. But there are like maybe seven guys will attack a bank. And they'll rob the bank, and two will get killed, one will lose an eye, and they'll get away with some money. But then they're not thieves, no? They're warriors, like that, you know? Yeah. And you're a baby until you're 6 years old. A baby, you know? You know, the girls don't really get married until about 23 years old. But after we began to figure out what was going on, traveling with them for so long, 23-year-old Manipuri girl is about the same development as about a 16-year-old European American girl. Everything is slower. You know? They die 90 years old, 95, 105. It's amazing. We're traveling so many years with the artists and stuff like that. Manipuri guy will come into the room and sit down, you know. And after maybe like 5-10 minutes, you know. Yeah. And so you can see everything is so slow. Yeah. After traveling in America, the West, he said, your country is so fast, everything like that. Yeah. So Maharaj grew up in this whole ambience, you know, very different world, very cultured world. And then he was a younger person. He wanted to make medicines. He decided he wanted to be a scientist because science is coming. Oh, science is again. He wanted to be a scientist, a chemist, to make different medicines to help people. You know, so he studied in Manipur. It was very remote and very simple. But somehow or other, he was good enough. He got a scholarship to Calcutta, and that was like big accomplishment, big competition. So he studied in Calcutta, which again is a lot of work. Calcutta is hell. You know. In the rainy season, stuff like that. Everything, my God, I was there for one. It was my first year. I was in India for one whole year, helping to organize the Science Congress on Prabhupada's centennial. And I was stayed in Bengal. He got a nice flat near the airport. Well, it wasn't a nice flat, it was a flat. It's like, it was there. Making this building. If you've ever been to Calcutta, there's the airport there. What used to be called the Dum Dum International Airport. So after a while they kind of said, okay, it's not going to make it internationally, the international, dum-dum international airport. So it turned to the Indira Gandhi airport. And boy, Bengal, it says that whatever Bengal is thinking today, the rest of India will think that tomorrow. It's a very progressive place, very proud of their intellectual atmosphere like that. But in terms of other things, God, you know, it was primitive in some ways. And when you came off the airplane in Calcutta, anybody ever land in Calcutta? In India, enter there? Yeah, your luggage will come off the thing like that, the automatic thing. It goes down and it turns like that. And at the end was this big iron post, like about this big. And several times it would catch the luggage and just rip the side of the luggage right off people like that. It was just like incredible. It goes down and it was like, like that. People just watching all their clothes and their underwear like that, makeup case just falling out in front of them like that, you know. Welcome to Calcutta, like that, to Bengal, you know. One time, and of course the whole Naxalite thing was there, you know, this whole Sendero Luminoso, this whole anti-Western and everything else political movement, and they were killing people. It was a big political controversy on Bengal, you know, heavy thing like that. So, and so Subhadra Maharaj, say, was traveling on a train from Calcutta, you know, to Navadvip, these simple trains. And the devotee who told me this was Rasa Parayana, this black devotee from Detroit. And devotees from Detroit are heavy. Mother was, I keep digressing, Mother Vrindavaneshwari, she's like a Western girl. She was in the temple, I think it was Miami, in the beginning, and Hare Krishnas had come there. So these kids were coming in their cars and going right across the front lawn, and then, you know, spinning their wheels and tearing up the lawn and tossing trash out and stuff like that, you know. So they're harassing them. So the temple president was from Detroit, which is a really heavy place, you know. So he called one friend to come down. So Mother Vrindavaneshwari said she was chanting her rounds in front of the temple, like about maybe like, you know, 5:30 in the morning. And this guy from Detroit was there also walking, chanting, and a black devotee. And so some kids came right up, they cut right across the lawn again, spinning their wheels, and pulled out into the road to drive away, you know, laughing. And this guy from Detroit stepped right in the road in front of them with the car coming right at him, pulled a pistol out, and began to shoot right into the windshield. Like that. And the car kind of spun around, went away. Then he put the pistol away, and she was standing there watching all this. He said to her, "They won't be back." She was also ready. So the next day, the temple president thanked the devotee from Detroit and said, "You know, see you later." You know, like that. Yeah, you know. So Rasa Parayana told me this story. He was with Damodar Maharaj, and he's about like, you know, normal height, about this tall, and about the same width at his shoulders. He's like this, like a Marine Corps guy, you know. And he said he was with Maharaj and Bhumna. And Bhumna was about over 2 meters tall, like that, you know. So they were taken on this train from Calcutta to Mayapur, to Navadweep, you know. And they're sitting there. And all these Bengali guys, you know, started coming in, like Naxalite guys, and really harassing them and teasing them. And, "You know, you Western guys, what do you know?" And this and that, and this and that, you know. And Swarup Damodar was, his Hindi, his, you know, his Bengali was trying to tell them, "Hey, be peaceful, they're foreigners, they aren't like us, they don't react the same way we do, don't do this, you know, show your culture." But these guys are real, obnoxious, you know, impudent. So he kept going appeasing them. So Rasa Parayana told me, said he was like, you know, saying this, and Bhumna was getting more and more agitated by all this, you know. So finally he said, Bhumna stood up, you know, and he had business in his eye. You know, he said, "Now we're all going to die," you know. Yeah. And so, and Rasa Parayana said, "Well, when a brother stands up, you know, you've got to do it too." So he stood up like that too, you know. He said, at that point, these Bengali guys figured out that if you're looking at somebody straight in the eye when he's standing up, when he's sitting down and you're standing up, when he stands up, he's going to be bigger than you. You know? So they're all like looking, and it's just like, is this, you know, 2 meter tall, angry black devil, like that. And the other guy, 2 meters across the shoulders, you know. And this at that point, and Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he said, was sitting over there, "I told you so. I told you so. I warned you. I told you." Now we're all going to die. Like that. So this is the end. Horrible. You know. But just at that point, the train pulled into a station. And then these Bengali guys were like, you know, jumping off the train like that. And Rasa Parayana said Bhumna was going to go and kill them even still. He's holding, "Come on, brother, calm down. Brother, it's okay. You're gone now," like that. "Be cool, man." It's like, like that, you know. So this is the atmosphere in Bengal. You know. Anyway, it's not going forever, you know. So Maharaj bought into a flat that was being constructed on VIP Road. It goes from Calcutta out to the airport, to Dum Dum Airport. The name says it all. Yeah. So they're constructing it. So we were on the ground floor, second floor. We were on the third floor. I guess you call it the second floor here, like that. And the whole thing was under construction. And I had to stay there. You know, you go, "Okay, Maharaj, you stay here, work on the science program, make contacts, everything else. Here's $100. Good luck. You know, Adiram will help you." Like that. Oh my God, you know, temple. So it was different austerities. You know. So as it turned out, it was the hottest summer in 35 years. I was talking to guys who had been there. I said, "I came 35 years ago, never been a summer this hot." You know. And even the street dogs were complaining. These guys were there in the afternoon going, and it was my first summer in India like that. And I was down to like about, again, like maybe 10 kilos less than I am now. It was just like, you know, because your body, it can run the locomotion system, right? and it can run the cooling system, but it can't run the locomotion system, the cooling system, and the digestion system all at the same time. You know, so it's really, I had to just fast and everything else. And then simultaneously, there was no windows on the flat, right, under construction. So the only enough electricity to run one fan, run power tools, no windows. And then the monsoon season came, right? So all these monsoon rains were coming through the windows like that. Yeah. And the Maharas had one 90-year-old Manipuri sailor to be my companion there, so I wasn't alone like that. He'd been on a boat, when a British boat for the British Navy, he was the steersman like that. And he'd seen the inauguration of Queen Elizabeth. They'd gone to England to see that, see how old he was, you know. So I remember, still remember this monsoon ranger coming into the side. So he took some of the sand for construction and built a dike across the floor to keep the rainwater from coming. And he was sitting there tossing the water out, singing some kind of, you know, British sailor song like that. You know? So it was going on. And simultaneously try to go out and preach, you know. If you take a bus in Bengal, okay, take your wrist now, a little game here. Take your wrist like this, okay? Okay. Now squeeze as hard as you can. Try it. You can do this. You know, squeeze as hard as you can. Okay, harder as you can. That's what it feels like if you're on a bus in Bengal during rush hour. Yeah, I'm not kidding. You know, you're so packed in, the person next to you will suddenly fall asleep standing up like that. You know, wow. And add to that, I don't know what it is, like 40 degrees and 92% humidity. Like that, you know. It's like, right? So you get to know people like that. It's just really... And then you're walking down the street in Calcutta and all of a sudden... you know, rain falls. Everybody runs up inside of the little place in front of some store and the water's flooding like that. Who are you? I'm the governor of Bengal. Here you are. I'm a thief. Who are you? It's like everybody just suddenly put together and talk like that, you know. Then the rain stops and everybody goes on like that, you know. So it's a very intense atmosphere. And so we're trying to preach during all of this, you know. And I'm not a great preacher or anything else, but we actually did, you know, some effort. We met some people and got some work done. And for this World Congress on Science and Religion, we did with the Maharaj, 1996. I remember one more point. I was there, and this time I was alone. There was nobody there on the weekend. And I went in to use the bathroom. And it was like, you know, second story, metal grate over the little window in the bathroom. And the doors, because the wood was expanding because of the monsoon, you know, I closed the door, and it kind of closed. There was a nail stuck in there to pull the door open. So I finished my business. I pulled on the nail, and the nail came out in my hand. Okay? So now I'm here in this bathroom with no thing on the door, on the third story, with nothing, the little iron grate in the windows, and nobody in the apartment, nobody coming probably for 1 week, you know? Yes. You know, yeah, I may die, you know? And, you know, screaming, yelling. So finally, I put my fingers under the door, and pulled, and the third time it opened like that. Wow, yeah. So close to dying, you know. Yeah, they closed one school in India for the summer, and okay, everything else, they locked up the bathroom, and one little girl had disappeared like that. So they found her in the fall. She'd been locked in the bathroom. She'd been using it, like maybe 6 years old, so she was 7 years old, and she was afraid to say anything because she was in this embarrassing situation. He locked her in, and she died like that. And she was trying to eat her hair. I could tell she'd been eating her hair and trying to survive. Yeah, so I remember remembering this. My hair is not the bathroom. Well, oh, you know, yeah. So I learned to Shingaday with me, you know. So we were at the, Calcutta airport? Oh, yeah, Maharaj. So he got his, you know, his visa to Calcutta. And a very tough place like that for a country guy from Manipur, young man. But he did well there too. Did really good competition there too, which is, you know, big. You know? So then he got a scholarship to Buffalo, New York. He did well there. And he finally transferred to University of California at Irvine, which is, of course, you know, it's one of the most prestigious schools in the world. And he was doing his chemistry degree there, studying physical organic chemistry, like that. What are atoms and molecules? And then one of his friends, I think his name was Ravi, said, Damodar, who's an Indian guy, let's go see Bhaktivedanta Swami, you know, the Hare Krishnas, you know. But Maharaj said he had this bad impression from this movie, what is it, Red Monkey, or whatever it was. So it got me this horrible movie about devotees. And all the Hare Krishnas were hippies who, you know, had terrible sexual relations in their temples and smoked marijuana together and stuff like that, you know. So he didn't want to go, you know. But he's just like Prabhupada, yeah. But he said his friend said, yeah, he visited a couple times, said, no, they're not like that. They're very nice. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is very nice. You should go. I don't want to go. I'm never going to talk to you again or be your friend again unless you go. All right, I'll go one time. Yeah. Like Prabhupada said, he was dragged by his friend. So he dragged him there. And yeah, everything was very nice. It was just like when he was a child, kirtan, Bengali, everything else. So right away, he became so happy and thanked his friend. And he started visiting regularly. And his friend got initiated as Ramananda. And he was doing service like that. But he had a heart attack. Not too much later, left his body. So Damodara Maharaj became so much attached. And of course, Prabhupada liked him very much. Prabhupada was preaching to him, talking to him, encouraging him. Because he's Gaudiya Vaishnava and everything else. And so finally, Maharaj wanted just to give up his PhD work and become a full-time devotee. But Prabhupada said, no, no, no. You have to finish this because you can preach in the science area. And you have to have your degree to have your prestige. Okay? Well, plug here for the Bhaktivedanta College. Yeah, you need to have the degree for your prestige and to be able to respect it. So he said, okay. You know. So the experiment he was doing, he had to put some chemicals in, wait for the results, record those, put some more chemicals in. That was his experiment. And so what he did is he moved his bed into the laboratory. So he would sleep for 3 hours, wake up, sleep for 3 hours, wake up, do his work. And he finished his PhD in like, you know, maybe in 3 years rather than 4 years. He set the whole thing up. First guy to finish it, got awards for it, everything else, and then became a full-time devotee. So from the very beginning, Prabhupada engaged him in this science preaching, like that. And he wrote some very nice things in the beginning, you know. But he did several nice programs. I think they were in Moscow. Was it Moscow? No, they weren't in Moscow. They were in Bombay or Delhi. I think it was Delhi. And they had a big Pandal program. And Prabhupada called him. He did a slide projection, a slideshow. Even a slideshow in India at that time was kind of like high tech, you know. So he did a whole slideshow about science and Krishna consciousness. And the next morning, he got the news that Prabhupada was across town, other part of Delhi, was calling for him to come immediately, you know. So he, I find this one citation, especially for, yeah. So he went there, and Prabhupada said, very good, you're understanding very well, you can do great preaching. So I want you to go with Sudama, one sannyasi, who had this really whole nice dance program he developed. He was a professional dancer, his family, tradition. So he did a whole dance drama, The Age of Kali. Have you seen that? My name is Kali. I mean, sin, I've come to do you in. Like that, yeah. He always did it. So he said, okay, now you go with him to Moscow and have a science program and a cultural program. And a cultural program like that. So from the very beginning, Prabhupada was pushing this whole thing of combination of culture and science. Like that, you know. He told him, hey, he told him from the very beginning that the way to preach to people is that first you have to have nice prasadam, nice reception. They come to a very, very well, you know, ornamented house with nice furniture, very beautiful girls in saris receiving you, taking your hat. Thank you, Dr. So-and-so, Professor So-and-so. The other ladies and gentlemen are here taking tea. And he said, a very nice reception. Everybody feels received properly, you know. Then you have nice prasad. Then after that, you talk philosophy. Maharaj said one time he was bringing one friend who was a scientist. I forgot his name. He was a world-famous astrophysicist from University of California, Irvine. So he took him to see Prabhupada on a Sunday like that. And he went into Prabhupada's garden in Los Angeles, right next to the temple, little place like that. And his sannyasis, devotees there, Prabhupada was preaching, oh, hello, Damodar, and here she's your friend. So he received him very nicely. Please sit down, bring a chair for the scientist. You know, he said, no, I'll sit on the floor. Okay, bring a nice cushion. And Prabhupada was talking about how we aren't the body, this kind of stuff, went on and on. And the guy was polite, but he was arguing every point like that. Well, this can be explained by this and that. We don't have to take recourse to a soul like that, you know, Swamiji. So Prabhupada wasn't arguing too much. He was just talking, he was preaching like that, talking. And after about maybe 15 minutes, he brought this big plate of Mahaprasadam, like this big, like that, all nicely decorated and put it on the table. And Mara said, it's the first time this scientist had ever seen anything like this, you know. He was looking at it like that, you know. The Prabhupada looked at him and said, this is for you. And where's it doing like that? And the guy was like, wow, what kind of nice reception, you know. So he started taking prasadam. And then Prabhupada stopped preaching. We started talking about different things, how he came to America and how different experiences, how in America he was surprised how everything was kind of bigger. He said, even the squirrels. In America, the Indian squirrels are this big and your squirrels are this big, you know. And then I was having a good time asking questions. So he said, okay, Damodar, take your friend to see the Artik. He took him in to see the kirtan. It was L.A. kirtan with three pujaris, Sunday fees, so many hundreds of guests. And he was very impressed with the kirtan. And they were coming back, and somebody had put a plate of Sunday feast prasad, eggplant balaram, the curd and curd bacon, curd, eggplant, and tomato sabji, like that, up on a shelf like that. And he said he was amazed because his friend, the scientist, took it and started. He said, can I take that? He said, yeah, go ahead. You know? So he started eating it, you know. And he'd already eaten a lot. He was amazed, you know. So he sat down next to Prabhupada. And now Prabhupada started preaching again, making the same points. And what to speak of accepting it, now the scientist was actually coming up with scientific evidence to support it. Yes, Swamiji. And this happens, we can't explain this and that. And that's like that. So very good, you know. So Prabhupada's kind of looking at Subhadamadhar, kind of going, yeah. You see, the way to a man's head is through his stomach. Yeah. So that was very much. And there was actually some controversy in ISKCON about this because some people said, no, you have to use the hammer, kick on their face with boot, you know, like that. That's how we should preach to the scientists, you rascal scientists. Prabhupada did that, you know. And Maharaj pointed out to you but on these transcripts, every single time when Prabhupada says, kick on their face with boot, then afterwards in parenthesis says, laughter, like that, you know. So he was taught, that's, we should have that enthusiasm. Bharata, my friend was walking with Prabhupada in, on the beach in Hawaii, and Prabhupada started talking about the rascal scientists. Not all scientists are rascals, but these rascal scientists. He was going along with his cane like that, talking about them, how they're causing all these problems, abortion, insane treatment of the animals, the environment. And then Prabhupada kind of stopped talking, just going along like that. And most of the devotees fell back a little bit. But Bharata said he was right next to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada to himself said, God damn bitches of sons. You know? Of course, the actual phrase is goddamn sons of bitches, like that, you know. But Prabhupada didn't know the actual phrase that well. He wasn't fluent in English language like that, you know. But he was to himself also, he was being polite like that, but he said, goddamn bitches of sons, like that, you know. But everybody could see that Prabhupada, he felt it, you know. His preaching was a very personal, you know, thing like that. It was man to man, like that. You know, when he was talking to a scientist, he was talking to another man like that and stuff, you know, so on, you know. Yeah, flavor, rasa, you know. So, you know, different programs, science programs, preaching programs, and Prabhupada was going to leave his body in Vrindavan. It was very old and weak. And he told Subhadamadhar, he said, organize something before I go, some kind of symposium. Let me see something, you know. You're not going to go, Prabhupada. Well, maybe I'm not, maybe I am. Let me see something, make sure. So then Mars organized the first congress on, what's it called? Life Comes from Life. And he got scientists to come from Mathura, Agra, maybe one or two from Delhi. And he organized it in Vrindavan. So all the devotees, the BI devotees were there, Bhakti Vinayasa devotees were there, Madhva, Dana, Dai, what was his name? Dayadra. Who else? Several like that, you know, Maharaj. And so Prabhupada had them all come in the room. He said, bring, and they were all wearing their suits and ties like that, you know. He told them they had to wear suits and ties, they had to have hair and tilak. It was like interesting. He made a very specific thing, like how they should dress. They all came in, they were going to sit on the floor. He said, no, bring chairs for the scientists, you know. So they all sat on chairs in front of him. And Prabhupada looking at them all, you know. And they said, Prabhupada, can you please come? And he said, no, I'm too weak. But if you put my bust there, a bust statue, and you put a flower garland on it, I will be personally present. Like that. So many very specific things about how to do the preaching like that. You know? So it was a good success. Nice discussion about the origin of life and science. And then after that, Prabhupada left his body. Samaras continued. There was a lot of struggle in ISKCON too, because Prabhupada told the small Krishna Maharas to have the BBT give, I think it was like $5,000 a month, which now may be $15,000 a month, you know, just to the Bhaktivedanta Institute program like that. And they were doing it. But then there was this controversy, Maharas wasn't using the money properly. That wasn't, you know, wasn't using it for bad things, but it was using it for programs that weren't that effective and more cost efficient to get my guys out distributing books in the street. So this whole thing, the budget was cut down, and so this whole, you know, this whole thing developed in different terms like that internally ISKCON and preaching. So I took sannyas from Maharaj in 1984. He came to San Francisco because of Treya Rishi, and I was associating with him. And then, you know, different things. I took sannyas. He was my sannyas guru. Very natural. So I was working with him like that, you know. And we organized a first world congress for the synthesis of science and religion in Bombay in 1984. In the publication, about 5 Nobel laureates or 6 participated in the publications, and at least George Wald. George Wald and Dalai Lama were actually there. And really intense debates, discussions. John Searle came. He was one of the foremost professors at the University of California in philosophy. He's a famous debater like that, you know. The university picks one professor every year amongst all themselves to be the university lecturer. And he gives gives 3 learned lectures on topics of his choice, and you know, as the university, like that, you know, very traditional thing. So he was elected as university lecturer 1 year. So he was there. Sir John, not John Eccles, Charles Townes. I think he was. No, he didn't come. He wrote for the thing. Didn't come. He invented the laser, Nobel Prize. Dalai Lama was there. George Wald, Nobel Prize in chemistry, was there. Willis Harmon, one of the regents of the University of California. These are the guys who run the whole show, 140,000 students, $1 billion of budget. So very big program. It was very successful. And so Sariputta got involved in this debate with John Searle about whether life is... Because Searle's kind of basically, he's kind of like an agnostic guy, not exactly an atheist, but he said you can't prove there's life comes from matter. Matter is sufficient. He had a very, very famous thing about the Chinese room problem, which is about is a machine conscious? When it translates things, does a machine know it's translating things? You know, what is consciousness? You know, so it went on like this, and so this debate started, and Sariputta was debating, and back and forth, and these guys, it was really great. It was recorded the whole thing. The people in Bombay, all these scientists were there, and it's like seeing like, you know, Searle defending materialistic, you know, Western thought. And Sariputta defending, you know, Oriental thought. So after the whole thing was over, they were behind the stage there, whatever, and Searle totally said, he said, Thompson, Sariputta, he said, I'm not saying I agree with you, but you can play a good game of hardball. like that, you know. Good debate, like that, you know. And Sariputta, you know. One time, he had a PhD guy in Spain. And they didn't know what to do with him. Like the guy was like a PhD, had him washing pots and stuff like that, you know. And he had all these questions, you know, hard questions, you know. And nobody could answer them. Bhakti Saranga Maharaj told me this. And, you know, but he's reading Prabhupada's books and he had all these questions. He said, but don't worry, in like about 1 month there's this guy coming, Richard Thompson, Sariputta, he's a scientist. He'll be able to answer your questions. Okay, wash pots, you know. Yeah. So Bhakti Saranga Maharaj said that Sariputta came like maybe like, you know, 10 o'clock tonight to the airport, so he went to the castle in Spain and took rest, you know. The next morning, they were sitting down there waiting for him to come down to meet this guy. The PhD guy was there, Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, Keshava Bharati Maharaj, and one more devotee. They're talking, and he said Sariputta walked in, and it was kind of like Godzilla meets King Kong. You know, it was like, he said, he didn't introduce anybody, you know. Sariputta came in looking at the devotees, this guy looked at Sariputta, and it was immediately like, you know, he said Sariputta kind of sat down like that, and this guy sat down. And he said it is started, you know, 800 megabaud, you know, megabaud connection like that. Your field, your area, your school, okay, you know, question. And so Bhakti Saranga said it was the most intense conversation he'd ever heard in his life, you know, precise data, precise arguments like that. There was a tape recorder like this. He was going to turn the tape recorder on. he reached for the tape recorder, and they both kind of turned towards him like this, you know. And he pulled his hand back like that, and they kept on arguing. You know? He said three times he tried to get it, and they both kind of looked at him like this, and like, he pulled back like that. Yeah. But, so it was like about 25 minutes, and after 25 minutes, the guy was completely convinced like that, you know, his questions answered like that, you know. Scientists preaching to scientists like that, you know. Yeah. But honestly speaking, now there's no tape recorders going. Yes, there's a tape recorder. Okay, anyway. Traditionally, scientists can be extremely intellectual people, but also extremely emotionally maladjusted people like that. This is famous, you know. One of the biggest famous, well, who's the greatest scientist in the history of the world? No, he's later. Before that, earlier. Yeah, Sir Isaac Newton, yeah. He discovered the law of gravity, the laws of mechanics, the laws of optics. He invented so many fantastic systems of mathematics. Any one of those is enough for a Nobel Prize, right? He did all of this between the ages of 18 and 21 years old, right? Before that, he was a theologian. After that, he was a theologian. When he was a scientist, he was trying to see how God is writing with his own hand. I can read the Bible, but I want to see God write with his own hand. Yeah? Yeah, but extremely emotionally maladjusted guy. He was always engaged in a great war with Leibniz. He was on the continent here, and they had this whole emotional battle going on like that, you know. And Einstein and Bohr had this thing going on like that, you know. So, okay, no, nobody is perfect, you know. So I kind of felt sometimes I was there because of the psychologist. I keep people on track, you know, like that. Here's these laser brain scientists, but they would just as likely argue with a doorkeeper as they would with a Nobel laureate. So you had to kind of, so maybe probably you should talk to the guy here. Why is it going? Oh, no, talk to this guy, you know, like that. He's a Nobel laureate, have more effect. Oh, okay, you know, like that. You know. Like that, you know. So everybody, you can see everybody fit in. My friend Lokanath, puppeteer, his wife, Mother Maharani, left her body. She's a very nice person, very chaste, very sweet, but she didn't know the difference between an atom and a molecule. She was like a very simple lady, you know, atom and a molecule, okay. But she's a really nice cook, you know. So we have these big conferences with Nobel laureates and everybody else discussing, was consciousness one of the elements of the array of the state vector at the origin of the universe? Like that, you know, we have a big discussion all morning. They're looking at their watches. Okay, 10:30, time for our coffee break. Ah! He's Nobel laureate, everybody else. They run back up in the back. And there's all these beautiful kinds of pastries of different kinds and, you know, call it non-caffeine coffee. These big Nobel laureates just sitting there like, you know, taking this and that, like that, you know. Yeah. Your body tastes whatever you eat for about 3 hours afterwards, like that. You can feel it. You eat something, your whole body feels like that, you know, for hours. So you take prasadam for an hour, 2 hours afterwards, you're intelligent. You can understand things like that. It's a fact, you know. Then after that, again, you sink into this gross meat-eating body, you know, like that. We fed these guys for about 3 nights. The second conference was first international conference on the study of consciousness within science. Before this, if anybody said the word consciousness at a science conference, it was like somebody saying the F word, like that, yeah. There's certain words I can't say here like that, right? Yeah, you know what they are, but you don't say them like that. If I say those, everybody, oh my God, look at that word, you know? So at a science conference, if someone said consciousness, everybody went, oh, he said the C word, like that. It was like that. When scientists said it, it was just like, you know, George Wald, big Nobel laureate, he said, the way science is adjusted at this conference we had on the study of consciousness, he said, the way science is set up, consciousness is outside of the range of science. And he said it's going to stay that way until we redefine what is science, like that, so on. So we had this conference, and we were cooking for them. Mars paid to bring the best cooks in ISKCON there. He got them these outfits with the buttons and the chef hats. One of them was Ram Shraddha, who was an Indian devotee, kind of brown complexion. So he had this old outfit on. He looked really good with his hat like that. He'd come out. Other one was Sadhana. He didn't look so good in his outfit, but he would come out during the prasadam. And big, beautiful hotel, everything very nice, you know. See, Nobel laureates, everybody else were taking. And they would come out like in kind of circulating. They would, oh, you're the cooks, and how do you make this, this and that? And they would talk and stuff like that, you know? So, oh yeah, yeah. But one night they wanted to go out and, you know, go traveling and see San Francisco, so the biggest tourist areas in the world. And so then, okay, we weren't going to cook for them, so we were checking out these hotels, top of the top, Mark Hopkins, Fairmont Hotel, $700 a night for a room, you know, glass elevator outside the buildings. Oh, it was really incredible. You can argue it's the most, one of the nicest places on earth. But they wanted to go and see all these things. Okay, so, Ari Bowl, here's your taxi thing. Come back before 10 o'clock. You know, we'll see you. But we were looking for some place for them to eat. And so these hotels had these little mini banquet menus. If you had like more than say 10 people or something, you know, and it's half fries or something. So I was there in our office, you know, with one of the devotees, and the fax machine started grumbling. And one of these hotels was sending back, they had six menus you could choose from for groups like that. We went over, what is this? It was coming out of the machine, and it looked like Ravana's Feast in Hell. It was like, you know, the baby calves' eyeballs pickled in brandy sauce. It's like it was this one. We both of us were sitting there like looking like, you know. It was like, it was unbelievable. This ghastly things they were offering like that. It was unbelievable, you know. Escargot, you know, frog legs like that. It's unbelievable. Pickled frog legs. Like that. So on. But okay. You guys go and do it. We're not going to cook it for you. You know? So that was the second Congress. And the first one, Willis Harmon said, I've never known there have been so many people who have thought the same way I did before. So the BI did really significant work with that Congress on the study of, you know, science and religion like that. The second one, the University of Arizona organized the first international conference on the study of consciousness within science about 7 years later. And then we said, we did it before. Well, maybe some crazy Hare Krishna thing. No. Five Nobel laureates, everybody else. They said, okay, second international conference. They admitted it was the first one like that. And Searle was there, the one in Arizona. They brought up this whole thing about consciousness as being a scientific topic in psychology. Everybody kind of looked at him, and he kind of like went like that. Go ahead and talk about it, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, they were coming to the point of accepting it's an acceptable topic. We can discuss it. And we have some way to get a handle on it. And the third one was the Second World Congress for the Synthesis of Science and Religion in Calcutta. And that's what I was working on, you know, when Mars came. And it wasn't so big internationally. But in Bengal, had a lot of effect. Bengal, of course, was a whole communist thing. You know, that everything's scientific. And of, you know, different. We had two Nobel laureates coming for that one. Big thing like that. I was going around the University of Calcutta with one of Dr. Bandyopadhyay's friends, a student, to try and put up posters for this thing, you know. And visiting, he was taking me to visit some people. We visited one professor. He was looking at the poster, looking at me. His secretary brought in his coffee. You know, he was looking, drinking the coffee, looking at me, listening to me, drinking his coffee, looking at me, looking at the poster, you know, looking like that. Finally, he told her, put it up, like that, you know, okay. Went to the next guy, he was a chemist. He was friendly. He said, oh, very nice, a good idea. Nice to talk about this. And I said, we'd just been visiting the other guy. He said, you visited him? You know? And he said, what did he do? How did he react? And I said, this and that. He's kind of laughing. He said, he's the chairman of the Communist Party at the University of Calcutta. Like that. So, Jyoti Basu, he was the head of this whole communist movement like that. When the whole thing started, you know, maybe 20 years ago, he said, we're going to bathe Bengal in the blood of Vaishnavas, like that, you know. But after ISKCON was there for maybe 15 years, Radha Gopinath, he died. He said, you know, I think Sri Chaitanya was the first communist. Yeah. So anyway, it was like, we had this conference, I guess I'll finish with him. We had this conference, and discussing all these things. And S.K. Mukherjee, he was the head of the West Bengal Science Association before, studied in the Sorbonne. He gave a nice presentation, big area, big theater, so many scientists. And the press did nothing. They did no advertising whatsoever. Nobel laureates coming, everything else. Obviously, they had a block on the thing. But still, it was growing. People were coming. So 2 days before the conference, they had this big editorial for 2 days. Synthesis of science and religion? Impossible. like that whole heavy materialistic thing against it. You know? But still, many people came. And then after, so Mukherjee said, so I propose, he said, I've been a scientist for 25 years. And he said, we all know that science doesn't answer all the questions. And we're looking around, and so many people are going like that, you know. So I propose we study science, study religion the same way we study science, intelligently, rationally, like that. And people are kind of going, yeah, like that, you know. So afterwards, I was escorting him off the stage, and I said, do you get a chance to talk like this much? And he said, this is the first chance I've had to talk like this in about 15 years, like that, you know. So, and then at the end of the thing, always report, because everybody's calling the papers and complaining, we don't pay you guys for your opinion, we pay you for the news, you know. So all these reporters came, they wanted to get interviews with the Nobel laureates, everything else, and Rasaraj said, no. That, you know, heavy like that, you know. So, you know, this and so forth, so on, you know. So it didn't have a lot of international effect, but in Bengal, I think it was a real turning point in the history of Bengal.
And what Bengal is thinking today, the rest of India will think tomorrow, right?
And the technology that India is using today, Bengal will use tomorrow. Yeah. Yes. Like that. When I was there in 1995, the telephone system was still using electromagnetic relays. If you know what I mean. There was no diodes at all. It was all electromagnetic switching system in 1995. Yeah. And it would flood and you call somebody, you get somebody else like that, you know? Yeah. That was incredible. Yeah. So I guess RT kind of is kind of time for kirtan now. So Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj ki jai. Science preaching ki jai. Bhakti Vedanta College ki jai. Gaur Premanand Jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Shaina RT ki jai.